This is the Funny Mummies podcast, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian, writer, actress and mother to two very lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, arts and anyone who can help us in this crazy world of parenting. So settle in as we find the funny side of parenting and being bloody great women. Blimmin' I'm a good one. We have to be, don't we? We have to be. Not the next one yet. That's right. If you can, the astute among you might be able to notice the lovely quality. And that's because we're back in the actual studios. So hello and thank you for tuning in to Funny Mummy's show on Soho Rodeo as Rodeo. I always say that Rodeo as part of the Other Woman show. So yes, we're back in the studio. We're kind of went in and out of the studio like mum's cold cup of tea in a microwave. Which means we get to play you tunes, but if you're listening on the podcast, you don't get a little bit. But if you listen to Soho Radio, you get the whole blooming lot. And we get to see each other in real life. So everyone's happy, am I right? I hope you're all doing okay out there and that these shows are easing some of the heavy load you may be feeling at this moment. And thank you. Can I just take a moment for all the lovely DMs and messages about the show? It's really appreciated and warms my cockles, which are quite cold at the moment. So we are carrying on with our series TV Mums, and today I'm joined by, of course, Carol Jackson's number one fan, my regular co-host Gemma Beagley.
Hello.
Hello, Gemma.
Hello.
She's very festive today. She's got a Christmas jumper.
Yep.
She hasn't had her Christmas sandwich, which she's not happy about.
Running late, but it's all right. I'll have it afterwards. Boy,
oh, yeah. She's not going to miss out. We're going to be semi-festive. If you're listening to this and go, oh, God, it's going to be semi-festive. Our special guest today is comedian, TV presenter and actress and model, I should say. She plays Catherine Ryan's best friend Bev in new Netflix series The Duchess. She has also presented a host of TV shows for the BBC and ITV. She was living in New York, la-di-da-di-da, after she was scouted as a model, but she is back now and last year had her debut show in Edinburgh. I'm doing a thumbs up checking I've got that information right on it. And we are so glad she's back, as this woman is one of the most exciting stand-ups I've seen for a long time. She performed at my lunchtime comedy club, Screaming With Laughter, which you'll know. It's no easy feat with babies crying, mostly sober, tired mums. But I'm not just saying this. I've never seen the gig so lifted and united in laughter, and what we felt like we were just watching our new best friend. Slightly rude best friend, maybe. Please welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast, Michelle de Swart.
Thank you. What a nice intro.
That's all right. Ooh. Try to give love. You all right, my love?
I'm good. Yeah, I had a Christmas sandwich. And it was delicious.
It was delicious. And,
I'm feeling good. Nice to be here in person.
I know, isn't it? Yeah. I did say to you, I said, do you want to do this over Zoom or in person? She said, in person, please.
In person, needs to. Yeah, because we've gigged together now a few times, but the last time I saw you was for your mummy gig.
Have we not done another Zoom since
then?
We've
done Zoom, but this is in person. This is the second time we've met.
No, we keep doing one or the other. Next time I see you, it's going to be back on Zoom again.
I'm sure.
Gosh. Now, well, I think we should talk a bit about Zoom gigs but we'll get into that in a minute. So this is like a little icebreaker for the beginning. it's like a little get to know you. So people go, oh, yeah, I like the sound of her or not. And they might switch off. No, I'm joking. So tea or coffee?
Coffee.
She's coffee. TV or music?
Oh, music.
Ooh. Leggings or jeans?
Who's wearing leggings? Leggings or jeans? Are you leggings under jeans? How about that?
Especially at the moment, bit nippy.
Yeah.
Large double bed to yourself or someone to spoon?
To myself, thank you.
Acting or stand up?
Stand up. Always. Yeah, really? Stand up.
You sent me a message after the Screaming of Laughter gig and you went, oh, it's the best job in the world. And I was like, that's so lovely to hear, especially after my gig, because a lot of people go, yeah, I don't think I want to do that again.
You know what? I say yes to every gig, right? And so when I got the message from my agent, because it was quite last minute, I think maybe someone
did pull out, yeah.
Yeah, someone had pulled out, which is sort of pun intended, I guess, for a mummy gig.
wow.
Patty has just spat water over all the electrical equipment. Nice
bit
one.
Or swallow.
Jeez.
Oh boom, my boom. God, I'm so sorry.
I've never done that in comedy style.
I'll tell
before.
You what though, Michelle, that's the reaction that you want, isn't it?
There you go. Right, so when I was asked...
Sorry,
that's all right.
So when I was asked,
oh,
I was like,
God,
I thought that she goes, do you fancy doing a mother and baby gig at the Bedford at 1 p.m? And I thought, that sounds... Can I swear? No.
Well,
I thought,
apparently
that sounds...
we haven't had to swear, but we have to sort of apologise afterwards.
Okay.
So maybe just find another word.
I won't. I thought, that sounds... bloody horrendous. Yes, I'm in. Right? I just
the
thought,
challenge.
Yes, yeah. I thought, yes, I'm in. And I turned up and I was like, oh, I don't know how this is going to be. And it was like just a sea of Ziploc bags, mums breastfeeding their kids while drinking wine. And then after a little while, I was like, actually, this is going to be a banger. And it was one of my favourite gigs.
Yeah.
I had such a good time. And what feels special about it, it's not that when you do a late night gig, everyone's a bit slack, you know, everyone's a bit sauced up and whatever. But this was like, you really got the feeling that everyone was really appreciative of just having something for themselves that they could bring their babies to. And also my agent said, she goes, you can say what you want, all the kids are under 1 year old. I thought, great, all right then. And everyone had such a good time and I loved it. I was like, you know, I'd sent my agent a message after and I said, I had such a good time. I would definitely do that gig again. So please let me know.
Aww. Well, we did have a whole great lineup, to be fair, wasn't it? It was just a lovely atmosphere. And obviously it was after the first lockdown, so everyone was, you know, just like really happy to be out as well. Yeah, it was, thank you for coming.
That was great. That I loved it. I was like, this is hilarious. A bunch of crying babies and mums just like, oh my God. Like, you know, they're just happy to be out in a pub.
I know.
So, it was wicked.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for coming today. So let's just kick off from the beginning. And it's very appropriate today. So this series, we've been talking to different people. We talked to Holly Walsh last time, who is a co-writer of Motherland. So, I mean, first of all, you're not a mum in real life.
I'm not a mum.
In real life yet?
No, I'm not.
Or yet?
No, I don't. I'm 40 now. I don't really think, I feel like that ship might have sailed.
Do
Janet
you?
Jackson.
Huh?
Janet Jackson, 50.
Yeah, but Janet Jackson, come on. I mean, she's probably got... Strong jeans or loads of money. Do you know what I mean? Come on, babes. Come on. I joke on stage sometimes and go, you know, the two eggs I've got probably look like wasabi peas. I think that train might have pulled out of the station. Also, I'm single. So I'm not like...
Yeah.
I think, well, what do I have to do now? Probably do some crazy supermarket dash and be like, are you all right? Are your parents mental?
Yeah.
No, okay.
Tick box.
Like, yeah. So
It's hard. I had my second one at 40 and I think I was just coming up for 40. I can't remember. And that's why I'm standing up here, because he killed my pelvic bone. So, yeah, I'm not really selling it. But I'm excited you're our first sort of non-mum in real life.
Yeah.
But we're all mothers of nature, am I right?
Yeah.
But, but who's your favourite TV mum then, in past or present TV?
Well, you know, I would have to say for today, it's going to be Peggy Mitchell.
Yeah.
Barbara Windsor, R.I.P. But it would have been Carol Jackson, actually.
Good.
Yeah.
That was Gemma's favourite.
Right. Well, that's what me and my sister used to take the mick out of my mum and say that she got a coat that looked just like Carol Jackson. And like, I'm mixed race, you know, my mum's white, my dad's black, and me and my sister used to, when she came on telly, me and my sister like looked at each other and then looked at my mum and then looked at the TV screen, looked at each other again, and my mum was like, don't you bloody dare. We were like,
I'm trying to remember what a Carol Jackson coat would be like. A puffy thing, not really fur trimmed, badly fitted,
just kind of the pockets seem to be a lot lower than your arms should go. That's what I remember about it.
Wow, you two
shoplifter's
really...
coat.
Exactly.
You two really studied that coat.
Peggy Mitchell.
But Peggy Mitchell, for those listening in the future, we literally just found out today that poor Barbara Windsor has died on the 11th of December. And so tell us why you loved her as a mum in EastEnders. I mean, has she played with any other mums? I don't think so.
I don't, well, that for me is the most memorable.
Yeah.
And I just, I mean, when I think back to Peggy Mitchell as a mum, I'm like, oh, she was such a good mum. But was she? Because both of her sons were absolutely crazy. One's a murderer. I think the other one might have been a murderer.
I think they've
as
both
well.
Murdered.
They've both done a bit of murdering.
Yeah, both done a bit of murdering. But you're sort of like, oh, she's the salt of the earth. Yeah. What a good mum. But you're like, oh, I don't know. Was she? But she just, a little bundle of joy and like, what spirit. And she was always like, my boys, we're Mitchells. You know what I mean? Which, you know, after a couple of years of watching EastEnders, you're like, I wouldn't scream about that, Peggy. Yeah. But yeah, she was great. Love her.
Yeah, well, she definitely, I guess she did, they were dedicated to her. They'd do anything for her. So she definitely put the...
I mean, today we would say that that's a very codependent relationship.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just thinking that there's all sorts of things wrong and stuff. But I mean, I don't really watch EastEnders anymore. But those were the days when I used to watch it, really. The sort of Peggy Mitchell, Carol Jackson.
Little pocket
days.
Rocket, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a little pocket rocket.
She was, she was just incredible. I mean, I'm not sure how good an actor she was. Oh, I don't even know, was she even acting? No,
what do you mean?
But, I mean, like, was she even acting?
No, do you know what? I'm out of here.
How dare you say that?
Both of your actors, was she acting?
Well, to be honest, I don't even... I'm doing The Duchess, for me, that was my first acting job. Before that,
Really?
Yeah. That was my first acting job. And I sort of went in there thinking, all right, this is what I went by. I thought, just say the ting, don't move your eyebrows too much. So I'm not, I mean, I don't feel like I'm in a position to critique anyone else's acting. Wow.
So did you get coaching and stuff, or did you just rock up on set?
I did the audition, and 4 days later we were filming. I did a screen test with Catherine, and 4 days later we were filming. And I remember I called Catherine and I went, listen, I haven't had Botox for a while. Oh, hello.
Oh, God, that's unprofessional, isn't it?
I messaged Catherine and I was like, look, I haven't had Botox for a while, but, you know, my character is trying to be all like, but my character does, and I'm due for some. Should I do it right now before filming? She was like, don't you dare. That my kind of idea of like, just don't move your eyebrows too much was quite hard because I'd never had that much movement in my face ever in my life. So I felt like Jim Carrey, to be honest.
Did you?
In the mask. I just felt like I was super animated because everything that I told my face to do, it did. And it hadn't done that for about 10 years. So
I did Edinburgh a million years ago, and I did a mixed bill with a friend of mine, and I was sitting in the back and I was going, why is he angry? Like, he's angry at the audience, like, because they're not laughing or something. He'd say, why is he so angry? And I worked out it's because he hadn't had Botox and I'd never seen him frown before. So it was just,
Is anyone having Botox apart from me?
Well, I'm thinking about it.
Everyone.
Oh, yeah, I got a voucher.
Oh, no, babes. No. Okay.
Groupon. No, not like a Groupon. Not a Groupon. A voucher for a proper place.
What? No. No proper place.
Who's given that to you as a present, Jem?
My older sister. My Botox older sister.
Your older sister. Yeah, oh, that's shady. That's loaded.
I had mentioned
babes.
It.
That's shady. I mean, I'd take it off her and go, thank you. But I'd also be like, don't ask for a cup of tea around my house.
So she's been having it, has she, Jem?
Oh, yeah. For yonks, yeah. But she's a sun worshipper. Like, her face has seen it.
Wow.
She's seen better days. So tell me about your Botox.
Everyone is getting Botox. Well, I don't have any in my face at the moment, as you can see, because it is moving.
Right.
And I am not happy about that.
So what is it? I know that we're in an audio medium, which isn't ideal to talk about this, but what is it about your face that you would want Botox about?
So you can see my face, all of that. All right. So I think basically, I mean, if you want a quick bit of background,
I
used to be a model, right?
Yeah.
In New York. And
so you got scouted. What age was it?
I got scouted when I was like 19, just before my 20th birthday, which is actually really late to start modelling. I was a bartender and they were like, oh, do you want to be a model? And I thought, I want to leave all of this. No, I'm going to stay pulling pints of bitter in Clapham for £3.50 an hour. Thank you. I was like, yeah, of course.
I love that.
So went out to New York, modelled out there, for about 10, 12 years.
Wow.
In the trenches, babes. So when I got to about 28, my agents called me in the office and said, listen, we've all had a chat And I was like, yeah. And they were like, we've made an appointment for you to go to the doctors. And to get to, they said, oh, you know, you've got a little bit of sort of laughter lines, and you know, maybe you could right. relax your forehead a little bit. And I was insulted for about a second, and then I was like, how dare you? When is it for?
Yeah, okay.
Is it for the? And so I started getting it done in New York, and with like the best of the best, a woman called Pat Wexler, who Joan Rivers used to go and see actually,
right.
which maybe isn't the best advertisement, but anyway. Because I started going with someone really good, they sort of, their penmanship, if you will,
yeah.
is so advanced that you still have movement, right? So you can still raise your eyebrows, yeah. and you know, you just can't frown, but you can sort of swap frowning for what I call the sneeze look.
Okay.
You know, like,
okay. Ooh, I just wet like my tenor lady a little bit.
Exactly. But what happens if you start doing things like Botox at a young age is that you get a really warped view of how your face looks, right?
Right.
So like, now I'm 40, I look all right for my age. But because I've never really seen my face.
Your aging face.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, okay, that yeah. in my head, I'm like, oh, I look rough, you know? And then
right.
I'm, so I think that, you know, I wouldn't tell anyone not to do it, nor would I be like, yeah, go do it. But for me personally, I'm always like, I mean, last night I spent a large chunk of the evening just thinking, can you Botox your lower face? Oh, let me do some research yeah. about that. So me and Catherine, we didn't have any Botox while we were doing the show. All we spoke about on set was how we couldn't wait for
really?
The show to end so we could blast our face with Botox again. I ran off set. I literally ran off set.
That is so funny.
Into a doctor's office and was like, look at it, make it stop. I can show my emotion. I'm very unhappy about it. And then we went into lockdown. I spent about £500 on Botox. And then
you did that on your set.
Lockdown.
I thought that was brilliant.
No one saw it. I just sat in my house.
Not being able to frown, you said,
and not being
you?
Able to show emotion. What an idiot. And then just as like the last drop wore off, Boris went, oh, you can go back out now. I thought, oh, great, thanks for that.
And in your room, because we've gig together in real life and Zoom, you talk about having loves and not having loves over lockdown. Yeah. How much is that true?
Oh, it's so true.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a lockdown romance.
Did you?
Yeah. Thought I was in love. Yeah.
How did you meet then? Online?
Yeah. I met on Hinge. The dating okay. app Hinge.
Gemma's perked up. She's interested. Yeah. She's newly single.
Are you?
Well, not that new.
Not new.
No, but newly ready to mingle, aren't you?
Nearly ready.
Nearly ready.
Nearly ready to mingle, yeah.
How are you sort of emotional-wise? Because I think online dating can be a little rough. I think you have to be fully healed.
Yeah.
Because you're going to meet some weirdos.
And that's why I don't think I'm quite ready.
Right. Yeah.
I think that I wouldn't be able to, I've said this before, but I wouldn't be able to hide the still some bitterness that would come out in my pores.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I don't feel like proper ready.
Okay, yeah, then don't. But I mean, maybe you can have a little...
I was going to say have a little dalliance, because otherwise there could be that thing of you're never going to be ready. It's like with anything in life, isn't it? Like,
you can do... Maybe you can just do some window shopping, and just if someone really special you feel like you have a connection talking with, then maybe you can go and meet them on
yeah,
a date.
Yeah, that's true. I don't have to go out.
No, you
don't. Leave the house, do I suppose.
You can just talk to them. And yeah. also, I think there's certain apps now where you can have a video call yeah, on the app where yeah. you don't have to exchange your number. I think the best approach, if you are serious about it, is to think of it as a numbers game. It's law of averages, right? So each month you got to go, look, if I go on 4 dates, one of them might not be a psychopath.
Four.
Oh, fun times. Oh, I was doing 3 a weekend.
Oh, stop
wow.
it.
Oh, yeah.
You're like,
how long
out,
do they
no,
last?
No.
What? The dates? Well, it depends. It depends, babes.
It's the day.
I would say now's a good time just to start chatting to people.
Okay.
Make a profile.
All right.
Just start having a look. Basically, right. you're like this. You don't have to. You go into the Lido with your mates, right? Just
yeah.
decide on that. You don't have to get in the water.
No.
You don't even have to put your swimming costume on.
No.
You're just sitting on one of the Lilos, drinking a can of Coke,
yeah,
smoking
yeah.
a fag,
yeah,
judging
yeah.
everyone. If it gets really hot, you might get in the water, but the option's there.
Okay.
How about that?
That is beautiful.
All right. Lido, I'm there.
Let's have your track choice. I was going to call you Bev then, Michelle. And then we'll talk more about Bev. So do you want to introduce it and why you've chosen this song?
This track is called Nights Over Egypt by the Jones Girls. I've chosen it because I have impeccable taste in music. And it is a banger, all right? And it's a banger any time of year, but especially as the festive season's coming up. Put it in your playlist. You're welcome, ladies. You're welcome.
You're listening to the Funny Mummies for the Other Woman Show on Soho Radio. I'm Hattie Ashton, and we're talking TV mums, and I'm with Gemma Beagley and Michelle de Swart. Am I saying your surname right?
You're saying it perfectly.
I like putting a little accent on it for some reason. But anyway, so Bev, thank you, in The Duchess. So for those that haven't seen it, explain who Bev is.
Bev plays Catherine Ryan's best friend and also manages Catherine's business and is her confidant and just tries to give her, I guess she's the voice of reason, you know, in the show. Yeah. She also suggests a lot of pretty wacky stuff to Catherine, you know, like, oh, if you've got an unwanted pregnancy, get on an exercise bike. And she says some out there stuff, but I loved playing her.
Did you?
Yeah, I really did. I mean, she says a lot of things. One, Catherine is an impeccable writer. Like, she writes really well, especially as a woman, you know, and I loved Bev's character.
Some great lines you got to say.
Ah, I got to say some amazing stuff. And also Catherine gives you a fair bit of freedom. She's a great boss to have.
Generous, they call it.
Yeah,
generous,
she was.
Actress and writer.
Yeah, she was. She was fun. What I mean? Yeah, she was fun and I felt like I was in good hands, safe hands. You know, and if and any time like you know, if I should go, you know, if you've got something funnier to say, say it. Or, you know, if I fluff my lines a bit, she was absolutely fine about it.
And we don't really see your kid. You've got three boys
in
it?
I've got four kids in this show, yeah. And they were there a bit, but I think some of the stuff that we filmed didn't make it into the final edit.
Right.
But yeah, I've got four kids and they are so cute.
Are they?
They are so cute. It's weird being a TV mum because you're you feel protective over these kids. Yeah, definitely, definitely. You're sort of aware if they, you know, especially, and they sort of end up coming to you for stuff. Mm. So they'd be like, I want a biscuit or I want a drink or I want, and you just think, yeah, not mine. They were really cute.
Yeah, I've never thought about that side of things, but I guess that they got really into the role.
And you're an adult and you're there, you know. So if they've got a want, they sort of, you know, do what kids do.
But so in The Duchess, she doesn't. I mean, obviously she has her daughter Olive, isn't it? It's not Olivia,
correct.
It's Olive.
Yeah, Olive.
Which they do show, and we talked before with Holly Walsh and Tanya Moody, who's in. The Motherland is that obviously in Motherland they don't have any of the kids, and really you sort of see the tops of their heads running by sort of thing. And as parents, me and Joan both said, I like that. I don't want to watch, you know, no offense to Outnumbered or whatever, whether it's all about the kids, but you know, this is more about what it's like to be a parent, what it's like to be a mum. But in The Duchess, I did cry. I loved that Olive is an amazing actress. And their relationship, her and, Catherine Ryan's relationship with her daughter.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of it is based on her own relationship with her daughter, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak on Catherine's behalf, but I think a fair amount of it is probably drawn from, you know, her real life experiences as a mum. But Katie, who's the actor that plays Olive, was outstanding. I mean, I remember doing some read-throughs with them on like the first couple of days and I was like, oh, flipping hell, man.
Really?
I'm dyslexic as well. So they would just whiz through their scripts and just be acting it out. And then it would come to Bev's part and I'd be like, we are off to the shop. It was It was shocking. But yeah, their relationship was really special. And I think it was nice to see what a friendship they had. I think Catherine illustrated that really well, you know, between mother and daughter.
Yeah.
Because Catherine was a young mum as well. You know what I mean? So I think it's a little bit different when you've got a young mum. Like my mum had me at 20. So there's...
That's young mum.
Yeah, that's a young mum. Yeah. So
what was Catherine? Because I remember back in the day doing Edinburgh, and I remember her doing her show where she's pregnant, and it was all on the poster, and she's... I can't remember what it was called now.
Oh, Homecoming Queen. Was
it was an amazing
poster.
No,
I think that came after, because I saw that show.
Yeah, Not Miss Congeniality.
Yeah, something like that.
That was like
a
pun on that, wasn't it?
So that was... Yeah, you forget how young she was.
Yeah, she was. She was definitely before 30. I feel like she was in her mid-20s,
like, wasn't 25, she? 26 or something. Yeah. She's a bit younger than me.
Yeah, and she's always been very active as well, Catherine. You know what I mean? She's always, like, done Edinburgh anyway.
Oh,
like,
my God,
she hasn't let motherhood hold her back in any way. I don't know if that sounds patronising coming from me. He's not a mum.
No,
you know what I mean?
Not
you
haven't
let motherhood hold you back.
No, I mean, I gigged with her in the early days, and I have messaged her to try and get her on the show, but and we were...
She's busy, babe. She's TV's Catherine Ryan, isn't she?
And today I saw on Spotify she's like number one in the top podcasts of the year or something, so her podcast is doing very, very well as well. But yes, I always say that I remember we used to do these for the agency. We used to have to do the showcase gigs, which was just so dry because it would be just all media people that were just there going hmm, and I always were like, please just get some real audience in. But Catherine would MC them, and she would always just be so lovely and supportive. And that's the funny thing, when you do get some people go, oh, I don't know if I like her, she's a bit hard, you know, and all this sort of thing. You're like,
she's a girl's girl though.
Yeah,
she's a girl's girl, which is quite, you know, like, I think sometimes when people go, oh, I don't know if that woman's likeable, and she doesn't come across as a girl's girl, whereas Catherine actually is, like, she's a sister. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in the stand-up world, I mean, I don't know about you, Michelle, but, well, like, when I first started, I was on the cusp of things changing a little bit, but there was still, like, just always a woman on the bill.
I literally don't care about any of that.
No.
Like, I just am so, like... I know I'm funny. I'm here to do a good job. I don't take any of that into consideration. I'm coming on stage and I'm coming
doing my job
to crush. So I honestly don't care. Like, I just am not like, oh, am I the only woman on? Oh, am I the only person of colour on? Am I the only Jew on? I couldn't care less. I know what an equaliser being on stage is.
Yeah.
And I carry that as I go on stage. I don't think about any of these weird little things that are going to put sand in your vagina and knock you off track. No, I'm not doing it.
Kick sand in my vagina.
Exactly. And the worst thing you can do is do it to yourself.
Yeah.
So I've never taken that into consideration.
But I just mean, when we've talked before, when, like, I first started out, there was, you know, there'd only be one, and then two, that you wouldn't see other female comics. Mm. And then that breeded that kind of unwritten sort of...
I see.
Do you see what I mean? Like, you're meant to be in competition with them.
Right.
And it was certain comedians, I would say, Sarah Pascoe, Susie Ruffle, that were the first that would go, let's all go for a drink, you know, because we just wouldn't see each other. So for me, what I was saying with Catherine Ryan, it was like, again, like, okay, she's not being competitive because I'm a woman sort of thing, which was sort of thrown at you, you know, but it's a lot better now.
But I wonder if the other female comics were being competitive, or that was just sort of something that was kind of put in our brain.
Yeah, like, it's subconscious. It was just put in our brain from...
Because I haven't experienced
promoters.
That. I mean, for me, especially for me as, you know, someone who's brown, that is also a factor as well, is that I go, well, there's no other black comics on.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? There's no other black comics. So that, to me, is probably... I'm just as aware of that as gender. But again, I'm aware of it, but it's not something where I let it... you know, make me feel inadequate in any way.
Affects your your performance,
right,
as you said, going on to the stage.
Right.
You're
because
seeing,
you know that one of the tricks of comedy is to know that you can do a good job, and that you want to reassure the audience that you're funny. And the minute you start thinking you're not, and you get up on stage, they clock that, and then they sort of go,
they smell
do you know
it.
What you're doing? you don't seem like you know what you're doing.
No.
And then you're instantly not as funny.
It's you just do forget that. I mean, I think about, you know, as a in my early, you know, before I thought about doing stand up myself, just going to Jonglers on a Friday night with my mates or whatever, and just, you know, looking back now as someone who's done it, is that thing of going on the stage and saying, I deserve to be here. I mean, there are four guys, invariably it'll be four guys on the Jonglers lineup. But it's just like, and they get you within the first few seconds, you're like, right, I'm on board now.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that it is important, right, to go, I deserve to be here.
Right.
Trust me, guys, I'm finding it's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It's
I just
trickery.
Happen to be a woman, a Jew.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
disabled, yeah. Whatever.
I used to have a little mantra, you need to hear this. Like I used to say to myself, but it's the same as saying I deserve to be here sort of thing. I don't know, it's stupid. But yeah. Do you think you always... how long have you been doing stand-up then, Michelle?
Just under a decade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so did you start in New York?
I started in New York, yeah. And then I came back here. So I had started, because I was a model, I did a bit of TV presenting here before I'd started stand-up comedy. And I remember kind of thinking, this is a bit of like, this is a kind of an extension of modelling here. Like, I'm reading auto cue, which is not my strong point because I'm dyslexic.
Same so
I'm
here.
Not, it's not yeah, even, I'm not
awful.
Even great at reading. You know what I mean? So I kind of knew, I was like, one, I wanted to do something that was the exact opposite of what I had been doing, which is, you know, modelling, which is heavily reliant on what you look like, and stand up isn't in a lot of ways. Of course, it helps. You know, I think especially as a woman, they like to use looks as currency. Yeah, because there's a lot of TV execs don't look like us. Do you know what I mean? They're not female. So I think that won't keep you going, but I think sometimes it can help. But I wanted to do something totally different, and I thought, I'll try stand-up. When I started, I didn't realise how hard it was. You know, like, I was quite cocky. I was sort of like, I mean, I didn't have an interest in comedy really before I started.
Okay.
I hadn't watched much comedy, and I quickly... realised that I was rubbish at it. And
Really?
Well, yeah, you're not good at first, are you? You got to get good. You might have a little something about you. You might be able to coast on charisma for a little while.
And I do remember you 10 years ago.
Do you?
And I remember seeing you, and but you certainly had something. There was a spark there. There was a spark, certainly a spark there.
But what about jokes, though, babes?
I can't remember any jokes, Michelle.
Exactly,
I'm not going to lie to you.
Exactly.
There was definitely a spark there, and it wasn't about what you look like. Actually, definitely something.
Well,
there.
It takes a while to get
good. Of course.
Yeah, it takes a while to get good. So I was quite lucky that I was here for. I think I came back to England for about 2 years. Did some like really questionable TV sort of panel shows, and you know, like, oh, I think I'll be good at this and that, but all a sort of a kind of TV presenting with the like, oh, and I'm a bit funny, but I wasn't, you know what I mean? So then I went back to New York and started doing documentaries with Vice, but I was able to keep doing stand up. And what was good about going back was that I was able to get good in private.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I got some breaks pretty early on with stand-up and I just wasn't ready. I didn't have more than 10 minutes. Mm. So when I did my first 10 minutes on TV, I was like, well, I better not book another job because...
that's it. You've had it. That's it. That's all
you've,
I got.
You've had it. I've been doing stand-up for a year. I've got a TV job already doing stand-up. And I was like, you're going to have to wait another few years. So luckily I was able to go away and then come back recently and be like, oh, well, now I feel like I'm better at the craft because I've put the time in.
Right. How would you compare New York to London then, stand-up?
Well, I tell you what. So you know what you said about women being sort of like feeling like there's not many of us on the bill and that feeling of competitiveness? Mm. You don't have that in New York because, one, like I've got... community of other black female comics that I'm friends with.
Okay.
And I'm friends with them because I had the pleasure of being able to gig with them because we were on the same bill.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So we got to have some healthy competition where I'd be like, I like that joke. Yeah, I see you changed that joke. Oh, you tweaked that. We'd all be on the same bill together.
Yeah.
And then after, we could all talk about each other's material.
Like a bunch of white guys.
Like a bunch of white guys. Exactly.
Yeah,
like, imagine having a community of people that... Not just like... Because for me, and I think for a lot of... black female comics, it's not just enough to be around, oh, everyone's a woman. It's like, no, we don't have the same. Like, I came in today, you was like, your hair's always different. I was like, yes, because I am black. Yes, that's something that we do, right? So these kind of things that...
I think that was Mae Martin just came in talking to female comics.
Oh, she's amazing, isn't she? Bing, 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 bing.
We'll just finish up the show really quickly.
Yeah,
can't tell at the moment because everyone's got a mask on. I was like, is it?
Right. But that's what was really good about being in New York is having loads of, a nice group of female comics, a nice group of black female comics, and then just comics in general.
Mm-hmm.
You also get to gig with... You know, if I gig at the Stand and Jim Gaffigan comes in, they're like, oh, we're going to pop him on. And then Dave Attell comes in and they're like, he's going on after you. So you have to up your game. Whereas here, I think you generally gig with people that are at your level.
Yeah.
And so you can get stuck doing the same material for a long time because one, you're getting paid and two, there's nothing to make you, sort of go, oh, I'm a bit nervous now. Let me get that out.
Let's have another trick and maybe we'll talk a bit about Christmas, what Christmas is for Michelle and Gemma this year. So, something a little bit different. You listen to the Funny Mummies on Soho Radio for the Other Woman Show. Jingle Bells by Bleached. There, a little bit different, Jingle Bells. What's the matter? Jim is signalling something at me. I want to know now.
I was just vaping, sorry.
Vaping.
It just sort of crackled down the mic.
So rock and roll. I've spat all over the set.
Honestly.
There's vaping going on.
They won't have us back.
They won't have us back. This is the first time back in an actual studio. I love it. Right, so Christmas coming up and I want to get back to Mums a bit because you mentioned, I should have said, I'm Hattie Ashton, Gemma Beagley, Michelle Diswart. You're listening, you know. You talked about your mum, Michelle, being only 20 when she had you. And I know in your set you talk about your mum not being very domestic, shall we say.
No, she was not domestic at all.
Is that true? So that's true?
That is, yes.
I just love 100%. The cracking open, the smash. I love
she,
it.
Cracking open, yeah. My mum, I'd be like, oh, what are you making for dinner? And she'd turn on the kettle and my heart would sink. Yeah. I'd just be like, this is a smash moment. She'd go, do you want bangers and mash? And I'd think, yeah, that sounds great. She'd turn on the kettle and then she'd put a can of frankfurters in the microwave. And
See, that's just giving me ideas because I'm not a natural mum in that way. I just burn everything. I'm still burning fish fingers and then I think I've taken after my mum. She wasn't great either, and you have to put a little bit of cheese on them if you burn them, just to cover up the burn.
Yeah. I come from a long line of women that aren't very domestic,
so
actually.
So do I.
And
I also
come from, like, there's a lot of lesbians in my family. Not that that runs side by side by not by being domestic, but just not that, like, yeah, my grandmother's a lesbian. She's been with her wife for my whole life. And my grandmother's sister's a lesbian. And they're just sort of not that fussed about these, like, traditional...
Compliant with...
They're all pretty right on, actually. So I think my mum culturally raised me really well, but as far as being able to, like, cook a meal, and it just doesn't bring me joy. I just don't care.
So you're the same, you're the same.
I don't
you're not
care.
Right.
I just am like, if I'm hungry, I'm like, how can I make this end? But, like, not like, how can I make this end in a fun way? By let me make myself an amazing meal. I'm like, I'm not that bothered. And nor was she.
Have I spoken about Christmas in my mum doing Christmas?
No, I don't think so.
Because she's the worst cook. And... But she absolutely insists on cooking Christmas dinner every year, and she will not have any help at all. And every year we just sit there thinking, oh God, how bad's it going to be this year? How bad's it going to be? And she, you know, this massive turkey, and she would have watched Nigella, and it's red currants this year, so red currants in everything.
Red comes in the pee.
At least she's trying.
Do you know what? I'd rather she didn't try.
You'd rather just go to the Toby Carvery.
You know me. I love a Toby Carvery.
I love a Toby Carvery as well. Only one helping of meat, though. It really annoys me.
You got to go king size with the sausages.
This show really needs to be sponsored by Toby because I think this might be the third time we've mentioned it.
It's the only thing I like about going to Croydon. Do you know what I mean? Is that you I don't, know there's a number
you don't,
of
we're in Soho now and I don't think there's any Toby Carvery. Do you know what? It's definitely missing, a suburban-y thing.
They're missing something. They're missing a catch.
But so will your mum be doing Christmas dinner, Michelle?
My mum, yeah. She's.
Do you celebrate Christmas? I shouldn't just assume.
I am Jewish. It is now the second day of Hanukkah. But I don't really celebrate. I'm sort of like, I'd say, although I am born Jewish, I'd say I'm more culturally Jewish than practicing. We don't really recognise, you know, sort of either or really. Right. I mean, Christmas is like, it's there. You know, my mum some years insists on serving Christmas dinner on paper plates because she's like, no way am I dealing with the washing up. So then we finish our dinner and she just opens up a bin liner and we just chuck it.
That's amazing. I'm just getting the ideas. They're going ting, ting, ting.
Oh, yeah. So, no, I mean, it's not really a big deal.
But is she a very maternal mum in other ways?
No, she's a very practical mum. My mum was always really practical.
Quite hard
with stuff.
Or soft?
I'd say she was like, she wasn't very, like, she brought me up in ways that have been really helpful as a woman, but she definitely, like, my mum put me on the pill at 14 and I was like, I'm not even getting fingered. Like, what? And she was like, no, pregnancy can happen at any moment. And if it does, it'll ruin your life. Right. You know what I mean? Well. And I was like, yeah, but I'm literally, I haven't even had a whiff of Lynx Africa yet. I'm like, we can relax. But she was like, no, it's really important now. You're a teenager. We've got to get you on the pill. I was like, why? You know, so my mum was always, one of the things she used to say to me growing up, which I used to use in my stand-up early on, is my mum used to sit me down and go, listen, Michelle, it's a lot easier to regret an abortion than a child. All right?
I mean, yeah. Put that on a fridge magnet.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I'll buy one.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So she gave me some, like, pretty good advice as a woman, but, you know, like, my mum would be like, listen, if you're going to do drugs, make sure you buy your own. Never go back to a man's house because he's got drugs, so make sure you got your own and cab fare, and if you put a drink down, that's it, it's gone. You can never touch it again. Like, weird stuff like
yeah,
that.
Like,
but actually,
proper,
now
like,
I'm
streetwise.
Yeah. She was a bit like, all right, like, sit down, we're going to smoke a Super King and I'm going to tell you how it is. Yeah. Which when I was younger, I used to think, flipping hell, this woman's mental and really
did you?
Paranoid.
Did you ever go around friends' houses and think, oh, I just want my mum to make me a nice dinner? And...
Yeah.
Did you?
Of course. And now I'm older, I can actually go, you know what? She gave me some like no messing around training for womanhood.
Yeah.
But she's probably never going to get a grandchild because of it.
But hasn't she got. You've got a sister, haven't you?
I've got two sisters, yeah. But one sister's from my dad's side. So although she's 44 and a grandmother, yeah, that's nothing to do with
it's
my mum.
It's not her blood. Right. Yeah. Wow. And is she very proud of the way your career's gone and everything? Is she?
She must be. Yeah, but she's, you know, she's a Jewish mum. It's a sort of always kind of like on the border of like, borderline personality disorder, quite frankly. You know what I mean? She's kind of like, I mean, this is great, but I always knew. Everything
oh, really?
Is like, I always knew. You know, I always knew this was going to happen. Yes, this makes sense because of all of these things that I did. You know, my mum's very much like that. She's not like, well done, you've done really well.
Love
She's
that.
Like, yeah, I knew. I knew this.
Blimmin' love that. She's just the complete opposite to my mum. I think as I've got older, I wish she'd done a bit more of that womanly stuff, you know, but she was soft as anything.
As in, like, practical?
Yeah, like, the you know, I don't think she even really talked to me about periods and stuff. I just sort of had to, I don't know, I just talked to my sisters, so that, you know, sisters.
My mum was great with that. Even when I came on my period, she went, right, listen, I bought you some Tampax. I was like, no, I'm just going to use pads. She went, don't believe all that virginity crap. You're going to be fine. Now, this is how you do it. And I was just like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. It's a bit of a shock, isn't it? Remember those days? I think we're going to wrap up. What should we go out on. I don't think I can bring myself to play your track today, Gemma.
No, that's completely fine.
Because I'm not feeling that vibe. Is that all right?
That's fine, yeah. No, I mean, I'm the opposite to Michelle. I've got the worst taste in music.
Oh, can I pick a track?
Or we can quickly try and find it. Go on then. Could you get my producer to look for it, because I can't, you know. As I said the other day, I can't do... women are meant to be good at multitasking, but what I realise, it depends what the tasks are, Michelle.
Isn't fair it? Enough.
Like, yeah. That's why I can't cook, because I can't be cooking and then doing this, and, I don't know, watching the kids and da-da-da-da. Or all the different things that you're meant to look for when you're cooking. Like, make sure that doesn't burn and make sure that... But if it's watching Netflix... Eating a whole chocolate bar, no problem with those two tasks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And flicking through Instagram all at the same time.
You need to get yourself a slow cooker.
Isn't that just a broken oven? Sorry.
What's your track, Gemma?
It was Runaway by The Cause, Michelle, actually.
We have played it on here before, though.
Have we?
Yeah. Sure we did. Oh, now I feel bad.
No, don't feel bad about it. It's terrible.
It's not terrible. I love it. You know I love it.
Can I tell you my suggestion?
Go on, then.
Just tell me what you think. It would be Wham, Everything She Wants.
Oh, I mean, well, you know me and George.
And George, that's perfect. Can you find that? Wham, Everything She Wants. It's a man, but we'll let him off because he's George.
Oh, yeah, come on.
It's not my fault. It's the other woman.
Oh, my God.
Do you love him?
The other day, I remembered he was dead again. And
did it make you sad?
And you had a little sinking feeling.
I was just like, I never got to meet him. I just feel...
That's how I feel, is I love him. Oh, I watched a tribute concert to him in the Clapham Grand last year. I was like the youngest person there by about a decade. But I was like, yes!
Oh, my God.
That would have been amazing. Right, yeah. Are we good to go? So, thank you so much, guys. So, we know what Gemma's doing for Christmas. She's having a dinner.
Rubbish dinner, sorry.
Not so perfect Christmas dinner.
Whatever it is this year.
Michelle, is your mum even attend? Will you be with your mum?
I will be eating a dinner on paper plates.
Perfect.
Think of me and shed one lone tear.
I'm not even sure what I'm doing yet, but I think my husband will be cooking Christmas dinner. Sorry, show off. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you so much to my guests. You've been listening to The Funny Mummies on Soho Radio for The Other Woman Show. Bye-bye. Say bye-bye, girls.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast in association with The Other Woman Show with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to Gemma Beagley and our guest today. Please see the write-up in this episode to find out how you can follow us and our guest online. This show is edited by Alex Holland, recorded via Zoom. The show also goes out on Thursdays on Soho Radio as part of the Other Woman Collective, where often you can hear the full music version of the show. If you'd like to support us and get lots of goodies, like a video version where you can see our mugs, go to Funny Mummies on Patreon, where you can buy us a coffee or maybe an hour's childcare. Thanks very much for listening. Keep subscribing and telling your friends. It really, really does help. We'll see you next time for a dose of Mum and Tonic.